Well, they're so small and unobtrusive that most of us wouldn't even notice them. They're RFIDs, or radio frequency identification devices. And it's technology that's becoming increasingly popular with companies who want to track their merchandise from the manufacturing plant floor to the cash register. But the technology's popularity is starting to raise alarm bells with people concerned about consumer privacy. And one of those people includes Canada's Privacy Commissioner, Jennifer Stoddart. She released her annual report to Parliament this week and warned of the threats that RFIDs pose. And we reached Jennifer Stoddart at her home in Ottawa this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Susan.
Jennifer, what prompted you to look at RFIDs initially?
Well, we try and track technology because increasingly technology is a major determinant of privacy. And among the technological phenomenons that really caught our attention, as it has of privacy advocates throughout the world, is the increasing use of RFID technology.
Okay, you better help us out here. Give us some examples of what these are.
These are, as I understand, and I'm not a technological specialist myself, these are radio frequency antennas attached to microchips in a casing of some sort. They're very small, and therefore they can be embedded in almost an infinite variety of materials. The antenna then can emit a unique signal and process information in such a way that it constitutes a unique identifier.
So where do we find RFIDs now in Canada?
We did a small survey, and from what we can understand, RFIDs in Canada at this point are only used for things like inventory control, merchandise management in the warehouse, supply management in goods that are moving from one continent to another across the country.
Why are you worried about them then when it comes to consumers?
Well, because the next step is putting them into everyday items that we could purchase in the store. This has already happened in Europe, where we find RFIDs in a variety of ordinary consumer goods. I think in Germany and England they're being used. So I think it's just a matter of time before they're rolled out here.
And if they are in consumer goods, what would they tell retailers or manufacturers about us?
Well, as I said, each RFID is unique. So unlike barcodes that tend to just tell the retailer, for example, about the generic type of good that you purchased, each RFID relates to one particular object. So we have a capacity then for identifying far more precisely what everybody is buying, therefore what they're doing, therefore what profile of objects they have acquired and are used. And of course, if we don't know that the RFIDs are in the objects that we buy, and if they haven't been turned off, we could be taking them to our homes where, you know, eventually, possibly, they could be rescanned to identify what objects are in our homes.
So would this be a personal database? Like, would ultimately, if it were pushed to this extent, would people know what Susan Ormiston buys and how often and things like that?
Exactly. We can tell now from your credit card purchases what you buy. I mean, that's another personal information issue. It's probably in a database somewhere. But we don't know exactly where the objects are, and we just know that you bought, for example, a tube of toothpaste. We don't know exactly which one. And then if you give that tube of toothpaste to somebody else, well, then who has it? We can't track that now to any extent. And this is all possible with RFID. So you have a very powerful tool for potentially profiling individuals.
Now, Jennifer, were you satisfied when you surveyed companies, Canadian companies, that they were going to act responsibly when it came to privacy, or are there issues here?
We were happy with the cooperation we got from these companies. This was a voluntary survey. Some were more aware of this issue than others, shall we say. And we realized that we have to bring out RFID guidelines, which is how to take our national private sector privacy law called PIPEDA or substantially similar privacy legislation, which exists in Quebec, Alberta, and BC, and how to translate this into everyday practical steps about protecting personal information while using RFIDs. Because they do have some useful, like all technology, it can be good or bad. It depends on how you use it. And there are useful justifications for having RFIDs in goods, you know, for safety purposes, for national security purposes, to tell if people have tampered with objects and so on. You put them together with global positioning technology. They can locate people. This can bring added safety to many workers in many situations. But misused, they can be very dangerous.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jennifer Stoddart is the Privacy Commissioner of Canada. She was in Ottawa this morning. Well, not everyone agrees with the concerns raised by the Privacy Commissioner. David Ilo runs a company that helps manufacturers and retailers cut costs using RFID tags, and he's the president of Synergex Corporation and joins me in our Toronto studio. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Susan. Thank you.
So you heard the Privacy Commissioner. Are you as concerned as she is about the misuse of these things?
I think that there is a potential concern if the RFID system were implemented very badly and carelessly and without proper public discussion.
So what would that mean?
That would mean that right now the RFID tag is a meaningless numerical, alphanumerical identifier. So if one were to acquire the identity of a tag being a long string of digits and letters, you really wouldn't have anything more than that. It's just a meaningless reference. So where that has meaning is in the databases that it connects to. So right now we have database security over our banks, our health records, our driving records, what movies we rent, and the business controls and ethical controls, legal framework that we have works to protect consumers from disclosure of that information. So,
is there any such protection for data banks that collect things about what we purchase?
Similarly, say a company who were going to give you a credit card knows information about you. Is that widely accessible to everyone? No. So in our society, we've really had to deal with the issue of numbers and what do they mean, references and what do they mean, and how do we control database access. This is a fairly old issue, and I think society deals with it fairly well. We're going to have to adapt and learn about how RFID should be implemented properly. That meaning basically don't put information on the tag, only put meaningless references on the tag so that privacy is protected.
One of the concerns she raised was whether RFIDs could be used to monitor people or things. Is that possible?
That's the intention of RFID is to place an identifier not only, for example, on your house, which gives you your house number, or on your phone, which gives you a phone number, but on things and assets or people's identification badge if they enter into a public building, for example. All these things could have numbers. And since they have numbers, then the numbers can relate to something that has meaning.
What do you mean by that? I asked you if it's possible to use RFIDs to monitor people or products and where they move.
So you could monitor these numbers, but unless you know what the numbers mean in the databases, it doesn't really mean anything to the random person who could scan a tag.
But if each number is unique, as she suggested, unlike barcodes, isn't it possible?
It's possible if you had access to the database. If you have no access to the database, then you just collect a bunch of meaningless numbers that mean absolutely nothing to you.
Are there readers that could monitor these devices from a distance? Is that part of this?
The most common application of that is actually on a public highway in Toronto that's called the 407. There is an RFID transponder in the vehicle that we use. And people love it when they get on the highway. There's no longer any long wait times to get on the highway at a gated toll booth or long exit times to get off the highway. Just drive on, drive off. The reader at the entrance to the highway and at the exit is receiving a signal from that transponder that says, this is my number. This is my 407 account number. So the 407 uses that in order to bill you for use of the highway. We have not had any possibility that someone who would receive that radio signal from that transponder could find out any information about you, though, because all they could do is just get the number. They can't reach into the database about where you drove or what you did, because all they can get is the number. The 407 has that information. So it's up to the institution to protect the fundamental data that's behind it.
Are those the same type of RFID devices that are in consumer goods?
No, those are very different. So there are many types of RFID tags. So we're not just really talking about one technology, but a whole constellation of technology. The 407 type tags is, it's called an active tag. It has a battery in it, and it actually emits a radio signal. It can be detected from many meters away, up to, say, 30 meters away. When you're talking about the tags that go in or could go into clothing or shoes or CDs that one might buy, or that are used in supply or in inventory management in companies or location management for, say, access and egress out of buildings, those tags are called passive tags. They don't have any battery. They don't emit any signal. So it's not possible to read those except at very close distance. So one of the issues that the privacy commissioners, I'm sure, are concerned about, and that is an appropriate concern to look into, is will it be possible for a person to have their RFID tags scanned without their consent and without their knowledge? And at the current state of technology for passive tags, which is the most widespread use, it's practically impossible because you'd have to get several centimeters away from that tag and dwell on it for about a second in order to be able to read it.
David, briefly, how close are we to putting passive tags, RFIDs, into consumer goods?
There's been some pilot projects about that, and Synergex has been a leader in that piloting process with a number of companies. And companies are really at the stage where they're thinking of the applications that it could be used to enhance customer service, enhance customer satisfaction, reduce error rates, because that's how they compete. And we are some time away still from widespread implementation.
So months, years?
We're talking about some companies implementing them in 2006, but I'll give you an example. In 2001, the forecast said that by 2006, we would have tremendous penetration of RFID into Western society, and it just hasn't happened. So as the tags get cheaper, then we'll find that the pilots get more successful and it'll be more implemented, but I think we're looking at several years of gradual rollout.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
David Ilo is the president and CEO of Synergex Corporation, a provider of RFID systems to manufacturers and retailers. He was with us in Toronto. Emil Grafstad is one person who doesn't need convincing that RFIDs are a good thing. The 29-year-old Washington man didn't like carrying around all the keys and passwords he needed to get into his apartment or start his car or log on to his computer. So after some research into his options, he implanted RFID chips into his hands last year. He was in Vancouver yesterday afternoon where the current caught up with him.
I have two implants in each of my hands. The left hand has a 125 kilohertz EM4102, and the right hand has a 134 kilohertz Philips Hightag S, which has 40-bit crypto security features and 255 bytes of data storage. In English, that means that the left hand chip is a fairly cheap, RFID tag. It's a $2 tag, and it can be used with really cheap reader hardware, like $40 reader circuit boards that you can kind of build into your own projects. The chip in my left hand actually opens my apartment door, unlocks my car door, logs me into the computer, and I'm working on a totally keyless system for my 2005 Hayabusa motorcycle. So I'll be able to just wave my hand, get on, and go. They're just under the skin. I can kind of push it up there. And there's a slight scar. The left one is 3 millimeters by 13 millimeters, so it's slightly larger than the ones that pets get through the needle. So that one had to be put in with a little scalpel cut. So a little cut was made, it was put in, Band-Aid, healed up in a few days, and it was fine. My girlfriend actually has one too now, and so we just add her ID to the authorized list, and she gets in. You know, and if everybody wants to know what happens when we break up, you know, and really there's nothing to it. We just remove the ID from the list, right? So, you know, if I wanted to, I'd take her ID out of the authorized list, and that would be that.
Pretty amazing. The future is now. That was Emil Grafstad, who has an RFID chip implanted in his hands. He's written about it in a book called RFID Toys and runs a web forum of the same name. Coming up in our last half hour, we have a feature documentary from Jordan, a country struggling to maintain its strong ties with the U.S. as its population grows increasingly disenchanted with the West. I'm Susan Ormiston, and you're listening to The Current.